Welcome to Does the Team Think with Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards.
All right.
And sitting next to me is Mrs. Joan L. Harper. Mrs. Harper, welcome to the program. You have a question, I'm sure. What is it?
Does the team think the reason my husband's pajamas wear out at the right elbow is that he's found an all-night pub?
What on earth is...
Wait a minute. Does the team think that the reason that Mrs. Harper's husband's pajamas wear out at the right elbow is that he has found an all-night pub?
Now, I think that the reason is this. I think he tells jokes in his sleep and laughs up his sleeve. I like it.
Very good. Very good.
I think he's left-handed.
Well, I don't know, because I don't wear out... You see, I've got rather sharp elbows, Mrs. Harper, so you advise your husband to do what I do. I wear corks on them. And then you don't... But the only place I wear out my pyjamas is the seat, because I fidget.
And that's not all.
Do you remember me combs? Yeah. Well, I used to wear out me combs, but... You know, there's a little button on the back, and you can cover the hole, you see. So put a button on each side.
What do you call that little button
on
the back?
It's an escape hatch.
Well, it's the escape hatch, that's right.
Jimmy Edwards.
Yes, it really does. His right elbow wears a... It's not from nudging you all night, is it?
Separate beds.
Separate bed. Well, he could lean over.
It must be a long difference in between those beds.
He may have a very long elbow. But
of course,
I'd like to put it to you this, that a bar or a pub isn't the only place where a gentleman takes the weight on his elbow. I thought that would go better, actually. Yeah, but it was a bit near for the first question, yeah. Wasn't it? A bit nasty. But why does he only lean on one elbow? That's what I want to know.
Well, surely you're there.
But is there a pub that would admit somebody in pyjamas in the middle of the night?
That's what I was about, Jimmy.
Well, yes, if you want a nightcap, yeah.
Very nice. As Mrs. Harper has admitted to having single beds, I should have thought the thing that would be worn out would be the little mat in between the two beds, and not his...
When leaning over, he falls on his elbow and wears a hole in it.
No.
Ted Ray.
This is Jack Durant's original gag when he said the carpet is slightly worn. I don't know whether it's the quick dash across or the slow drag back.
No, Arthur Askey.
That is why Mrs. Harper's husband has got a hole in his right elbow. Is that right? Oh, in the pyjamas.
Mrs. Harper, do you have any theory about this problem that you're faced with?
No theory, but if he is going to a pub in the middle of the night, I want to join him, that's all.
Is he coming apart?
His pyjamas.
I want to join him. Is he coming apart? Surely.
What? Cyril Fletcher.
Mrs. Harper, what I want to know is what is it that is stopping you from following your husband? Surely all you need to do is just take hold of the pyjama cord, not pull too hard, and follow him. And then you'll see.
A man walked into a pub one day in his pyjamas, and he said to the fellow, "My car has broken down outside." He said, "Have you a pair of pinchers?" He said, "Take my two barmen."
Even now. Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mrs. Harper. Thank you very much. Team, Mr. Bernard King sits on my right, and this is his question. Listen carefully. Here it is.
What do the members of the team look back on as the most wonderful smell they have ever experienced?
Now we're back to the pub again.
What do members of the team look back on as the most wonderful smell they have ever experienced?
Well, why are you looking at me? It's something to do with smell.
Well, it's yours.
No. One smell I do like is the smell of leather. I think leather is a lovely smell. I had a piece yesterday in a cafe. They grilled it and called it steak.
What was it called?
The steak.
Cyril Fletcher.
I expect Mr. Bernard King wants me to answer this because I'm what is known as an odd odour. And presumably I'm an expert on funny smells, but I'm not really. I think the nicest smell ever is freshly baked bread. And you anticipate this marvellous freshly baked bread, but Regrettably, of course, when you get it from the baker, not only is it all sliced, but it's all soppy and nasty.
Jimmy's favourite smell is obviously sweaty horses. Is that right?
No, it's sweaty hops.
No, sweaty horses.
Funny, actually, Arthur.
Because if you go to a hunt ball and you see a ravish... Because I'm often engaged for a hunt ball. My terms are very reasonable.
He's a society entertainer.
I use... A society entertainer, that's right. I'm often danced with asked to a dance with the hostess's daughter, who looks ravishing. She looks marvellous, you know. But you've had one polka with her, and she smells like a horse, even through the Chanel.
Are you quite sure you're not dancing with a horse?
No, the mother's the horse. Oh,
I see. I was at a hunt ball the other night, and the master's wife sent the waiter over to the other side of the floor to ask me for a dance. And for a waiter, he danced very well.
Now, that is not bad for a straight actor.
It may give you some ideas if we turn our attention to Mr. King and ask him what smells are evocative. Mr. King.
Yes, well, I've got to go back quite a number of years.
So have they.
You certainly can.
And yeah. I know others will come with me on the journey.
Not yet. No.
I remember... About 40 years ago, on my first visit to Devonshire...
Oh, yes.
I stayed at a farmhouse, which was quite close to a village right in the centre of Devonshire. And I remember very well walking down the village street quite early one autumn morning, and I got the smell, which Mr. Fletcher has already mentioned, the smell of baked bread, newly baked bread, mingled with the smoke from the fires, the wood fires in the various houses in the village... And the combination of the two was something quite wonderful.
Well, my combination smelled too.
That was the first chapter of Lorna Doone. You realise that, don't you?
I believe Mr. Bernard King was sincere in what he said, because obviously he's given this matter some thought.
But you see, funnily enough, Arthur, a moment or two ago, Arthur did say something about horse's sweat. And I'd just like to tell you a little anecdote that I did once lose my sense of smell. And it was such a gradual process, I didn't really realise that I lost it. I had something nasty in my nose, you see.
And it's that hair you've got on there.
No. And eventually I had a small operation, and this was removed from my nose.
In the wrong place.
Gradually, my sense of smell came back. And the first time I really realised it was playing polo, and I suddenly said to my girl groom, I can smell this horse's sweat. And she looked at me as though I was mad.
I'll tell you about the story about the fellow had a little pawnbroker's shop, and for many years he put a tatty old fur coat outside on a stand. Nobody ever bought it. It was there through winter, through summer. And one day a woman walked into the shop and said to him, I'd like to try that coat on. And she did, and it fitted her perfectly. She said, it's beautiful. How much do you want for it? He said, £10. She said, I think I'll take it, but it's a lovely coat, but phew, there's an awful smell. And he said, oh, it's not the coat that smells, it's me. Ain't I a dirty schmuck?
Thank you, Mr. King. Thank you very much indeed.
I like it, Alan. I like it.
Very charming lady sits on my right now, and she's Mrs. Gwen Edwards. Gwen Edwards, welcome to the programme. What's your question?
Does the team approve of wigs and hairpieces, and would they ever use them themselves?
Does the team approve of wigs and hairpieces, and would they ever use them themselves? Cyril Fletcher. Charming of him to start with me, isn't it? Because, as you all know, on the telly, that is to say, if you watch that reactionary thing, if you watch the telly, you'll realise that I do wear a wig, and I'm not in the least bit ashamed. I think it's a frightfully good thing. It's a sort of, for somebody who is a little bit middle-aged, shall we say.
Never
so. It is what I call an escape thatch.
And
what I hope is that you don't know which is switch.
Well, I've seen Siddle on that programme, and all I can say is it looks like an escallop of veal on you. I like you much better as you are.
Oh, I never knew.
Yes, you knew. Honestly, you
I'll see you after the programme.
You look far more sexy as you are, I promise you that. I'll tell you this about wigs. Playing Dame in pantomime, as Siddle does, wigs are an essential, aren't they?
Oh, very.
And they cost a lot of money, and they take a lot of dressing, and I always have them on blocks in my dressing room, about half a dozen wigs. And then I get letters from ladies saying, can I bring the kids round to see you? And as soon as the kids come in the dressing room, what do? Grab your wigs and pull them off. Spoil them. But I've got an antidote, Cyril. I don't know if you've tried it.
No.
Have a television in your room. And when they come round, have the telly on, the kids ignore the wigs, they ignore the genius, they just go watch the telly. So that saves you a lot of money.
Jimmy Edwards, have you ever thought of wearing a hairpiece or a wig?
I thought I got enough on my upper lip not to bother with anywhere else.
He should always have a transplant, couldn't he?
He could always brush it up over his head, couldn't he?
I'm working on that, but I wouldn't be able to see my way around. But you know, quite honestly, I did once where, on the TV show, I was playing the part of a lighthouse keeper for a bit of a joke, and I had the
My wife does that, lighthouse keeping.
Yeah. And I had a big... a wig with all grey hair and a grey beard and all the rest of it. And after the show, I was in the makeup room and the girl got the old methylated spit, whatever it is they get.
Take
she pulled off.
Off
the wig, she pulled off the beard, and then she started to pull the moustache. I said, hang on, darling, that's mine. I'd like to make a bet here and now, Mrs. Evans, that you're wearing a wig at this minute.
Yes.
You are?
Ah, and it suits you, dear.
I wasn't sure, but I didn't think that amount of hair could grow anywhere else but on a wig.
But let me say that...
it's a lovely wig.
That is a lovely wig. You see, you can always tell the difference between a lady's wig and a man's
wig.
Well,
I wouldn't wear that.
My God, you wouldn't have get some promises.
My hair keeps falling out. What do I need to keep it in?
A cardboard box.
Jimmy. There's collusion going on.
It's collusion.
You're razor. Quiet, team. Quiet.
Can I tell a story, Mac?
Yes.
I can tell a story about a wig maker who was very famous in theatrical circles years and years and years ago, named Willie Clarkson. You know him. He was a strange gentleman.
Yes.
More of a lady than a gentleman.
Yeah, but rather precious, wasn't he? Yeah.
He used to make these wigs. Really. Yeah. And every Christmas, the royal family at Windsor had amateur theatricals over the Christmas period. And Willie had to make the wigs, you see. And he told me that one Christmas he went down and the late Edward the Peacemaker, who made a lot of pieces in his time, I may say, including Lily Langtry. What was his name?
Edward the Seventh.
Edward the Seventh. Yeah. He went down there, and Willie said, and I did the wigs for it, and he came down to me after His Majesty, and he looked at me and he said, Willie, your wigs was bloody awful. Wasn't it nice of him?
May I tell a story about the same chap and about wigs? Well, he went to a first night, and it was a fabulous, unbelievable first night, and it was a wonderfully successful show. They had thousands of pounds worth of scenery and thousands of pounds worth of costumes, and the stars were all unbelievably big ones and all very highly paid. So they said to Willie Clarkson, what did you think of the show? And he said, marvellous, I couldn't see a single join.
But I'd like to thank Mrs. Edwards for opening up new prospects to me. The thought of having a different colour of hair every day has really made me think about this wig question, you know.
You'd have dye the moustache, Jim, each day.
Oh, that's
true.
The moustache would have to match in, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I could dye the moustache. I could have a false moustache.
Of course you could.
Will you leave me your moustache? I'd like to stuff a sofa.
Mattress.
As a matter of fact, it's going to be bequeathed to the nation and mounted.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Gwen Edwards. Thank you very much indeed. And now it's time to meet our special guest, one of the country's top comedy writers, as well as a frequent performer on radio and TV, co-author of Round the Horn, it's Barry Took. Now, there is a pause. Excuse me, Barry, could I ask, for the benefit of the listeners, exactly what it was you were doing just then?
I was adjusting my hairpiece.
It's very nice, Barry. I bet your wife knitted it for you.
Thank you, Barry. I'm sure it's all your own, but can we have all your own questions?
What do the members of the team regard as the high spot of their day?
What do members of the team regard as the high spot of their day?
Always supposing there is a high spot. I go through a great many days where there's nothing but low spots, I can tell you.
And what about if you're my height? It's all low spots.
Especially if you've got acne on your bottom.
Remember, I get a high spot, Barry. I always remember the old saying, needle never get well if you pick it.
Unless you're the shop steward.
For me, the high point, second, is the moment that the first cork pops out of the first bottle of champagne.
When I pick up the Times in the morning...
With the hole in one elbow.
And I look through the obituary column and find out that my name's not there, that's a high spot for me.
There will never be that moment.
This may sound smolchy, but when I hear Jimmy play the euphonium and I hear Ted play the
euphonium.
Fiddle... And I hear Siddle do one of his odes, that's a high spot for me. Because I always think, well, if I can't beat that, I shouldn't be in the business.
And just let the viewing audience know that I led the applause for them.
I have seen you playing, and I will say this, and quite sincerely and honestly, that you play the piano brilliantly. So why are you so modest?
Can we, when there's all this modesty around... We all know that Arthur plays the piano brilliantly. I'd also like to be kind enough to our guest and ask him if he can get a word in edgeways, perhaps by suggesting a high spot for you.
I look at Jimmy and I think of high and I think of his answer about opening the first cork of the day or pulling the first cork or whatever you do to the first cork of the day. And think, if only I could get up at 5 o'clock in the morning too.
I want you to know, Barry...
Hang on! It's his turn, shut up.
But Jimmy and I used to go to Miss Fanshawe's together.
Oh, really?
Did she charge you the same amount?
Barry Took. What about Ted Ray?
The length of hair. I don't know. I would say playing the violin in the first class saloon
of the what? QE
and the first class saloon of the QE2. I was going to say Titanic, but I didn't like to.
All right. We're doing
the
very
QE2
well.
Would have the same fate as the Titanic if Ted played on it.
By chance, do you have a high spot for Cyril Fletcher?
I would reckon the high spot for Cyril Fletcher would be on the morning that he received his knighthood, as the sword touched his shoulder, Her Majesty would say, "Here, give us one of them odd odes, young."
But I can tell you, Barry...
You're ever so kind, but she doesn't speak like
that. I was going to say, because I've been in that position... I was going to be knighted by the Queen, but when I knelt down, she couldn't find me.
I'd like to tell you the actual truth about the life I lead, Barry, because it's not often revealed. I come down in the baronial hall, down the stairs, you know, beautifully carpeted, and I sit down at this very long table.
Where do you sleep? In the Tate Gallery?
With all this beautiful cutlery laid out. And the butler comes in and takes the silver lid off the you know the
coffee
kedgeree.
No, as a matter of fact, kippers and the kedgeree and all that. And then when I've had my first sip of the coffee, the butler opens my fan mail for me.
Yeah,
that's it. That's the high spot. Well, of the day.
What do you pay a butler to open one letter for?
Do you want the real truth, Barry?
And nothing but.
Right. I wouldn't mind.
I'm going to tell you the greatest moment of my life. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
And I'm very serious now. These three...
It's all right, the girl's dead now.
You see... Well, I know you went out with a 6-foot girl. The last girl you had was 7-foot tall. Your friends put you up to it.
I'm sorry, Ted. Time is up. Thank you. Barry, too. And now, Team...
Terrible.
Now, Team, you're going to hear from Mrs. Ivy Mountfield. Mrs. Mountfield, welcome to the programme. Take courage in both hands and let's hear your question.
Does the team think we take too many tablets these days? And have any they've taken had strange effects?
Well, you must have taken a few when you bought that hat.
Wait a minute. Does the team think that we... Mrs. Mountfield wants to know, does the team think we take too many tablets these days and have any they've taken had strange effects?
Mrs. Ivy Mountfield's hat is absolutely delightful. Isn't
here,
it?
Here, here.
Nice?
Lovely.
And if only this were television. If only
I think it would go very well over the right elbow of a pyjama jacket.
I say, if only this were television, they could see it. But I would like to... If one could describe that hat.
I think it's a lovely hat.
So do I. Thank
it's you. A lovely place to carry a teapot.
Oh, dear.
Well, may we also thank Mrs. Mountfield for not being insulted. She's laughing
yeah,
all the
she's
time.
She's laughing with it.
Very sweet.
Very lovely with it. What I want to know is it a wig that you're wearing under the hat?
Actually, I think she's only got one ear.
One wear.
I've got one. Oh, I know, but she's Van Gogh.
She's been frightened by a strap hanger.
And she's just smelt something that reminds her of something.
Shall we get back to the tablet?
Yes. Team, may I just remind you again of...
We have a question.
Yes. Right, does the team think we... Shut up, Mrs. Mountfield.
I'm sorry.
Mrs. Mountfield has hysterics. Now, quiet, Mrs. Mountfield. Does the team think we take too many tablets these days and have any of them had a strange effect?
Well,
can't
now,
you...
listen, yes.
May I just ask one question before you do, Joan, just this moment?
We've had
such fun with Mrs. Mountfield's hat. Would she be kind enough to describe her underwear?
No.
But, you know, it is quite true that we... I will get this down to sanity again now. That there are far too many tablets taken. As a matter of fact, if one looks at the statistics...
Just what?
You can get tablets for that, you know, Jim.
If one looks at the statistics...
Nice people.
A great many tablets are bought... A great many more are bought than are actually taken.
Yeah.
Most of them are left in that little cupboard above the wash basin in the bathroom.
Oh, is that what it's for?
Well, I
you put that, your teeth in there.
You
Ted.
Suddenly think you
both get, of them.
I mean, you get a stung by a wasp and you start thumbing through these bottles to see if there's anything useful. There's never the tablet you want. But there was a fellow that I knew who was a little bit worried because he was a young man and he was going to take this blonde out for the night. And he asked the doctor if he could give him anything that would enhance his, what you might say, romantic...
proclivities.
Romantic performance, you
proclivities.
See. And he said, take two of these before and two during and three after. And he said, anyway... So he said, what the good the three after are going to do, I don't know. So the next time the doctor saw him, he said, how did it work? Did they work? He said, marvellous. He said, absolutely, those pills work marvellously. He said, how did the blonde enjoy it? He said, oh, she didn't turn up.
Arthur, have you ever taken tablets?
Well, but they had side effects on me.
What side effects?
I started walking sideways.
Oh. Could I tell you a little joke about a man who wanted to slim, so he went to his doctor, and the doctor gave him some tablets, and these tablets made him sleep and very well at night, and in his sleep at night, he imagined in his dream that he was chasing beautiful girls for miles, so that when he woke up in the morning, he'd lost a lot of weight. So he told his friend about this, who was also rather fat, and he went to the doctor, and the doctor gave him some pills. But he, unfortunately, didn't chase in his dream beautiful girls. He was chased by horrible cannibals. But, of course, he lost weight. But he went to the doctor and complained. He said, my friend is chased by beautiful girls, and all I get is chased by cannibals. Why is that? And the doctor said, well, he's a private patient, and you're on National Health.
Thank you, Ivy Mountfield. Exit Ivy Mountfield with her beautiful hat. Enter Mr. Leslie Williams. May we have your question, please?
What is the team's idea of hell on earth?
I can tell you mine right here. What is the team's idea of hell on earth?
Hell on earth, for me, actually, purgatory, which is probably another word for hell on earth, is an airport lounge when the airplane's been delayed. I don't know whether any... I've done an awful lot of flying in the last few months.
And that's only with his arms.
And that's a serious answer, Mr. Benfield, to your question. Does nobody agree?
I agree with you, Jim.
I'll tell
you what is hell on earth. If you're on a train that has no corridor and you want to go and pay the water rates.
There's a church in Cheshire, where there's a notice outside which says, "This door is the gate of heaven." And then in brackets it said, "This door's locked in winter months."
Anyway, I tell you what's hell on earth.
Yes, Arthur.
When you're turned down by a woman. Mind you, it's never happened to me.
Because you're so small, you look like a page.
I'm turned down before I start.
How about being stuck in a lift?
I don't suffer from claustrophobia. My girlfriend does. It's a fear of being confined.
I see that Mr. Williams has one or two ideas about this. Mr. Williams, what's your idea?
The mission edition of Does the Team Think?
That is what I mean.
You. Thank you.
That's really your idea of hell.
No, hell.
No. I got it wrong.
He did say to miss an edition.
Oh, to miss. I thought he said to listen.
No, that's it. You're thinking of a party political broadcast.
Another form of hell, which is akin to me to the airport lounge, people here obviously have never been in airport lounges, is a supermarket. I really get a touch of the hab-dabs in a supermarket because there's so much going on and I can never find them.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to sit in the trolleys, Jim. You know that.
Thank you very much, team. And there, I'm afraid, we must close Does the Team Think for today. On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askin, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and our special guest, Barry Took. This is MacDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.